It's the Reality TV Happy Hour with Jordan Parhar, because you can't spell Parhar without R-H-A-P. Reality TV Happy Hour. Reality TV Happy Hour.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Reality TV Happy Hour. My name is Jordan Parhar, and today we've got a special podcast for you. We're going to be previewing the finale of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X with some good pals of mine. First is a man who is hungover and is so hungover that he just got breakfast. It is about 1:30 on the East Coast, but he just got breakfast, and that is why he was late for this podcast. Brent Walcom, I had to call him. He was driving in his car frantically through Silver Spring, Maryland, but he made it here on time, and he got his food. It is Alex Kidwell, ladies and gentlemen. Alex, how are you?
I'm doing good, Jordan. In my defense, I mean, we scheduled this podcast this week. I had Friendsgiving on my calendar since January for last night. So that was always going to be a bit of a time crunch for me, but we're here.
We're here. We're here. We did it. I'm impressed, Alex. I'm very impressed. I saw your Snapchats last night. It looked like you had a fun time. So glad you can make it. Next on the panel is a man who also has bought Rogue One tickets ahead of time so that he could watch the premiere before most people. It is Brent Walkabout, ladies and gentlemen. Brent, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I did buy tickets ahead of time for Rogue One, and I don't know why everyone else isn't excited about it. Like, this is a Star Wars movie, people. Are we not pumped for this?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really good, Brent. I saw the it was the world premiere last night, and everybody was just tweeting saying how great it was. So I'm crossing my fingers. We'll see All what right. happens. And last but not least is a man who is trying to win his third straight LFC fantasy draft in a row. It is the great Taren Armstrong, ladies and gentlemen. Taren, how are you?
Yeah, I'm the winningest LFC, and I'm also the on-timingest LFC, because I'm the only one that wakes up at a reasonable hour.
Taren, what time do you wake up? Like 6 a.m.?
Yeah, 6, 7.
Are you serious on the weekend?
Well, yeah, I don't want to mess up my schedule.
So
yeah, he's like an 80-year-old man, Jordan. Like, he doesn't want to mess
up. Every day you wake up at 6 or 7.
He wants to be regular, you see.
Yeah, I do.
Pick your poison.
It's important to have a regular sleep schedule. It's healthier.
This is not my natural state.
Like, my natural state is to just, like, never sleep. But I have to force myself to sleep because, like, otherwise I'll die.
So
yeah, we really don't know you because, yeah, Alex and I love to sleep.
Yeah, see, Taren's living a happy life, but I'm living a full life, all right? Boom. That's right.
I'm okay. Living a full happy life, so.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, so just to set things up for you guys, we're live on robinswebsite.com. We're going to be previewing the finale of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X of the LFC. Now, we did a draft in September, so we're going to talk about that, talk about what we think about the season as a whole, lots of stuff. We're going to be taking your questions, so if you want to send those in, you can go to Twitter. You can tweet me. Use hashtag #RehappyHour. I'm at Jordan Parhar on Twitter, and we will get into those throughout the show. We've also got the chat room going on robinswebsite.com. We've got some issues with the post on the site. So I've just posted a hyperlink for you guys to just click on. So you can click on that link on the show page. That will take you to the chat room. Some people are over there right now. Right now, Alex is putting emoticons in there. There's some conversation about Arrow is happening while I'm talking.
Gross.
Yeah, I don't know what happened here, but Rob Sesternino's in the chat. It's fun. So definitely, if you're watching us live, head over there and chat with some other Happy Hour listeners. Okay, guys, let's talk about this season. First off, we talked a little bit on Happy Hour 100 about your guys' thoughts on the season. It was a little earlier in the game. We're now pretty much right at the end of Millennials versus Gen X, so I want to get your takes on the season as a whole. So, Brent, let's start with you. What are your thoughts on Survivor 33?
Hated the theme, loved the cast, loved the show. I really thought I was going to dislike this because I was like Gen X and millennials. I mean, I didn't even know what that was at the time. I wasn't sure what part I'm belonging to. Apparently, I'm a Gen X because, you know, she's almost 42. So I think that it's been a very fun season because the cast is delivered. They didn't need any special way to divide people because you could divide these people no matter any which way, and they still would have delivered. Even the people who were a little more quiet on screen have jumped out and gotten me. I just feel like it's been so much. It's been an interesting ride from the perspective of you don't know who's going to win, because I feel like last season, even seasons before that, I feel like maybe one, two people could be the possible winner. This season, I feel like it's wide open. I could even come up with ways that the people like Brett and Hannah, who people are not giving a lot of credence to as far as possible winners, could be your winners. So I feel like, you know, we're going into a final six where anybody could win. And that's really shows that the season is delivered. So I'm all in on this season.
Taryn, where does this season right now, if the season ended today, hypothetically, and I don't know, like, let's just say it's like just it's replacement level winner that we end up with. Where does this season rank for you all time amongst all the seasons?
Well, this is the podcast after a season of Big Brother OTT where I get to be on the opposite end of the spectrum because I absolutely love this season. Probably more so than even most. It would probably rank for me at least in the top five all time. Like I'm really loving this season. Like maybe a disappointing ending could ruin that to some extent, but I just feel like I think the editing is something that has, I think it's gotten some praise, but for me, I feel like the editing has been so good. It's a combination of the characters and the editing that is spotlighting these characters, because there are so many different people and so, coming from so many different angles who have their own motives, and we're seeing all of those things, and we're tracking their arcs throughout the entire season. There's nobody in this final six that we don't know who they are or why they're there or what they've been doing. Even Brett, who has been probably the least visible of all of them, has had a very like watchable arc to get to this point. And he is a very much like a likable underdog in this spot. And I like that, like every single one of it feels like Game of Thrones, where like there are so many different likable characters that could all do really well or be taken out at any time. And it has that feel of like complexity and greatness to it. And I love that they're all there to play the game and have fun, and there's not any sort of like grossness like there have been in other recent reality TV series.
Alex, what's your thoughts on this season as a whole? And you're the master of analogies, so is there any like a good analogy that you can compare with this season?
I don't know. Taryn already hit it with the Game of Thrones. I don't know that I need to get any more.
I know you can one up him. I know you got it in you, Alex. I know you can do it. Just think.
I don't know. I mean, I think the conversation that's most interesting to me is like how. Yeah, I mean, I like what Brent touched on about how all six really have, you know, established themselves as players. There's no person in the game who you feel like has no shot to win, and you feel like you know everybody. Like I can't think of another final six besides, I mean, Heroes versus Villains, where you had established, I mean, it was Sandra, Parvati, Russell, Jerry, Colby, and Rupert. And that's a six. You know what I mean? Like, I can't remember another six where it's like, oh, yeah, all six of these people, I totally know them. I totally know how they got here. And, like, I totally know who they are. And, I mean, obviously with those people, we had extra seasons to get to understand them. But, yeah, no, I mean, this season, you know, the editing has been very good. Even Colin Stone doesn't know who's going to win. So that's awesome. I think there's a lot to like.
Alex, what is the best outcome for us come Wednesday? What do you want to see happen?
I don't know if I know necessarily like that there's a specific winner that I really want to see. I feel like a lot of winners I'd be happy with at this point. I just think, you know, a really exciting finale would be good. Like something that sets us up for, you know, obviously the legacy advantage. I think a lot of people are talking about how like, oh, it's not going to mean anything. Like, dude, they presented this thing to us on episode one. This has been a season long arc. This legacy advantage, like, I'd be shocked if it's not like a huge, huge thing. Like a really significant power, but I feel like a lot of people out there don't see it as playing much of a factor. So I think that's like, to me, the biggest X factor lying over this thing. How powerful is that thing? How much control is it going to give Ken on like, you know, down the stretch? And then also kind of, I mean, are any of these votes going to get kind of crazy? Are we going to see anything like, you know, obviously the Cambodia final six vote was pretty insane.
Brent, what do you think the legacy advantage is?
Wow. I've gone back and forth about this. I have listened to Rob's podcast and he thought, you know, I think at one point Rob was saying that, you know, hopefully it's not going to be too powerful because, you know, you go through an entire season, you get to this point and it's been relatively mute for the most part. I mean, I know Alex says they talked about it in episode one and that's true. And they talked about it during Jessica's boot during that 2 hours. But other than that, I feel like it's been pretty quiet as far as legacy advantage goes. They've given it the bare minimum as far as story time, I feel like. So I'm hoping that it's not that big of a deal because I know all of us don't really like, or at least I don't like, advantages or things that make an uneven playing field going into an immunity challenge when you're this close to $1 million.
Taryn, you're a robot, so you have all the answers. What do you think this is going to be?
I have thought about it a lot. I feel there's been a lot of speculation that it maybe might have something to do with the jury. I don't think it has anything to do with the jury. I think that it's revealed too early. They don't want somebody to play this thing and have it to do with the jury and then that person get eliminated before the final three. That doesn't make any sense to me. So what makes sense to me is that it has to do with something of like keeping them in the game to get to the final three. And so what that is exactly, I'm not sure. It could be a vote stealer or an additional vote. That seems lame to me. They've done that a few times recently. It could be an advantage and a challenge, but that also seems like it's something they've done before and it's a very minor thing. So honestly, like I'm starting to think maybe it's something like not even just a single immunity. Maybe it's like right to the final three. Maybe you play this thing and you have immunity for two rounds and you have a spot in the final three. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
It's got to be three rounds if it's going to get straight to the final three. Yeah, because there's final six, final six, final five, final four. They got to win three immunities to get to the end. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's possible. I guess we can talk about I'm going to talk about the preview. So we saw in the previews, Kim is opening up his legacy advantage. Not with Jeff Probst. I feel like this is significant because he was opening it up off camera, like where, you know, you had to wait. And I feel like maybe that this is something where, you know, I know Taryn poo-pooed it a little bit, but maybe it is something where you can secretly tell the producers, you know, this is what I want to do with the jury, or this is who I want to get rid of on the jury if I make it there. I mean, it may be something like that where on day 36, you have to decide what your legacy is going to be as far as the jury goes. I'm really trying here for an analogy or a metaphor. And then, you know, if you get to the end, it'll then be revealed. So it's incumbent upon you to get to the end in order for your legacy advantage to play out. But maybe there's something more to it. I feel like we're just, you know, like, I don't think anybody... aside from a couple of random spoilers that I saw last season, I don't think anybody could have ever predicted the evict a juror from last season when Neil got the boot from the jury. Like, I never saw that coming.
Although, Jordan should have seen it coming.
I should have.
Right. So I don't know that we can really guess. I mean, I feel like their minds are pretty crazy, so they can come up with a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I saw.
Go ahead.
I want to quickly revise if it's not, because it is three rounds. I wasn't thinking about that. I was saying two rounds, so maybe it's just straight to the final four.
Take you to four. Okay. Yeah, so that makes this the Justin Duncan advantage.
All right, yes. Cool. Mm-hmm. Yes, for those of you who don't know that BBOTT advantage.
Or the pizza idol, if you will.
Right, the pizza idol. He hasn't been on social media. He needs to get out there.
Rob's saying maybe it really is the Justin thing. Maybe they have an opportunity to compete in a challenge, and if they win the challenge, they get immunity into the final four.
Maybe balance of some kind.
I feel like all of my reality shows are just colliding.
I'll present one other alternate possibility, and that's just, you know, we have six people in a finale and we're going to need to get through some eliminations in relatively quick succession. Something I saw thrown out there that, again, would be probably too powerful, but definitely a possibility. What if, you know, they go to vote at six and then they say, all right, Ken, now you pick who goes out at five. Just by yourself. You go just do a round of voting, like, and they would just bang out another round like that. Possible.
That's true. You're right.
That would be insanely powerful. But
I never really considered the fact that we are at six going into a finale. And I thought in my head, well, they can just whip through three immunity challenges really fast. But you're right. Normally, it's just two challenges.
Vote to vote. And they haven't done that in a while, but they used to.
And that would also make sense if it was a double immunity, because then they don't play immunity. Ken just gets it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like we're onto something here. I feel like this is a possibility, because it could be a vote, like a regular challenge and a vote at final six. Then at final five. Well, of course, then what if Ken got eliminated at final six? So
that's why it would be a double immunity. So he'd have the immunity when he plays the advantage and then he gets it.
All right, cool. Yeah. All right. So you think he's going to be immune at the final six and the final five, but is there also going to be a challenge at the final six? I feel like there would be.
There would, going into the final six tribal, and then there would be no challenge. They just vote out another person the next
Let me say what I think we're all thinking, at least I know I'm thinking, as far as, you know, maybe relating to this advantage. If this advantage somehow changes things where we get in some order a Jay, Adam, and David boot, leaving us with a Brett and Hannah and Ken final three.
That's how Ken
wins. I'm going to be really pissed about that. Like, that is the one scenario I think we're all kind of – well, look, I feel like – oh, no, I'm not going to qualify my statement. I feel like a lot of us are not – hoping for that. We want one of the winners to be one of those three people, between Adam and Jay and David. I feel like that the other three winners would be less satisfying and could bring the season down a bit for me. I just don't know. I know we talked about this earlier in the season. Colin Stone had predicted that Ken was the winner based on some editing. He's now changed his mind about that, so I'm glad to see that. Or he's not sure where the winner's going. If Ken is the winner, I don't know what Survivor's trying to tell us then by the way they've presented him, because there's no real story there. I don't know what to think of him as a possible winner. Maybe the finale will help rectify that, but yeah, I don't see it right now.
If Ken wins, Brent, I think here's the message they're trying to send, is that they had so much more footage on Ken that looked awful that they didn't use, that they like gave us like the most ideal face of Ken they possibly could. And like, that's the only argument I've seen that really – to me, gives like Colin's idea that Ken could still win merit. Like, I felt like that whole moment where he's, you know, like telling everybody that, like, oh yeah, it was testing Will and like all that kind of stuff. Like, dude, that, like, if that was anyone else, like, they would be playing coach music, like in ensemble, like Eric Reichenbach, like, you know, stupid noises in the background. Like, I feel like he would have gotten like the ultimate dodo edit. And I felt like he, you know, we saw people rolling their eyes at him and people like, oh, Ken, what are you doing? But then cut to Ken, like, I was testing him. I knew what I was doing. Like,
but
you
then
know
we
what
get
I mean?
Adam,
it's a little...
Right, I know. But then we get Adam immediately right after that condemning him, saying, you know, that's not a test. That's a betrayal. So I feel like that maybe they
and
wouldn't
Will
have
also saying
so hard.
He had the audacity.
Right.
hold on. Sorry, Taryn. Did anyone else think Alex's Ken impression kind of sounded like Yoda a little bit there? I kind of like that.
All my impressions are just impressions of Rob doing impressions. That's
right? I find myself doing that. Apparently. Yeah.
My friends said to me, apparently, yesterday, and I almost said, apparently. I almost did that. I'm like, shit, he doesn't get the joke.
He won't know the joke. Yeah. It's funny. I didn't catch it until like really this past week. But if you really listen to Ken, like when he'll draw some things out, and it's got like that Johnny Mac twang, like to the end of things, like where it's like, like
a little bit of Kermit the Frog.
A weird hook to it where it's like, this is like an older, more stately John McGuire. Strange.
Interesting. Taryn, you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I see what Alex is saying. We're like, you know, maybe a Ken win where he gave them really like nothing to work from as far as like strategy or like even like a likable personality. And I think Ken is likable to some extent, but I don't think that the people out there liked him a whole lot. Maybe his win is the reason why we're getting such a balanced and great edit, is because they needed to focus on all these other great characters that they had, instead of being like, all right, well, maybe we're not going to try and force Ken. Maybe we'll just try and make him look as good as possible, while also having all these other great characters.
I agree with Brent that I think, you know, like the three that I think make the most sense as winners is clearly David, Adam, and Jay. They seem to have played the best game. But I think I might be intrigued by the Brett, Hannah, Ken situation, just because, like, man, that seems like such a toss-up at the final three. Like, I know Hannah's got a couple people. I know Brett's got, like, Chris and Jess, or Chris and Sunday, and some people who are loyal to him. But, like, could Ken win? And I'm not even sure where those votes are coming from. I don't know. It's pretty up in the air there.
Possible that Ken could win 4-3-3 in a Ken, Hannah, and why do I keep forgetting them? Brett, sorry.
That'd be wild.
Yeah. It's so hard to try and figure out who the votes for Ken would be, because it really doesn't seem like a lot of people respect him on the jury. You know, he'll have Jessica and David.
Yeah,
and
too.
Beyond that, like, who else does he get, especially if he's next to Brett and
Hannah
too.
Who also have their own separate groups of people that would vote for them. So it's you know, it's like certainly not Will, like maybe Jay because he won a bunch of competitions, but it's just like, it's so hard to figure out where those votes would go.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, because I guess Michelle, I don't think, would vote for Ken. I mean, I guess.
Well, okay, maybe Michelle and Jay, Taylor, maybe.
But yeah,
if Hannah's there, it's like, well, wouldn't you think Hannah would steal those votes? I don't know.
Maybe, yeah, but how are they feeling about Hannah? You know, like
Sunday wasn't loving Hannah.
Well, why don't we let's run through this. I'm just curious as to get your thoughts on this. So hypothetically, if the final three is Brett, Hannah and Ken, okay, then we're going to have the current jury that we have, plus we're adding David, Jay and Adam onto the jury as well. So Michelle, guys, who do you think Michelle would vote for? Taryn, you're saying maybe Ken?
I think it's probably either Ken or Hannah.
I think Hannah, just because if you go back to the Michelle vote, Hannah wasn't in on it, right? Hannah was like, I wasn't. Or wait, no, that was the Michaela vote. Was Hannah in on the Michelle vote?
I think she was.
She talked to Jay afterward, and she was like, I had to make a move. She did the same thing Will did, she said. Yeah.
So I guess maybe we can say that one's going to go to Ken. Taylor, he's kind of stupid, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah, I feel like you can't really predict JP and like there's
I think that group is the wild card votes.
Okay.
Like Michelle, Jay, and Taylor, those are the people we don't really know where they're going to go.
Okay. So Brent is signaling we don't want to do this exercise.
Well, just like, because we're all kind of like, well, I don't know. Like maybe like for 10 people, like, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to poo-poo it. I just like, I don't have any strong conviction about, you know, I mean, who the hell is Michelle? Taylor, please. Girl, please. Like, I mean, I don't even know who these people are. Like, trying to predict who they're going to vote for in a final three is just, like, talk about a shot in the dark.
Yeah, the consensus, yeah, it's going to be hard to come to a consensus on it. But I think, like, as Alex stated, that would be an intriguing final three, not for the fact that we would get, like, the best winner probably of the season, but for the fact that, really, it's a coin flip. So I think that would be fun to watch. Who knows what's going to happen.
Well, it's a weird coin. It's like a three-sided coin flip. It's a coin flip where the odds are just as good that the coin lands on its side as on either like face.
A three-sided coin, Alex. That's what it is. I'm going to get your takes then. Who do you think is going to win this season? Because I want to know. I was talking to Rob on the voicemails. I think that David is going to ultimately be the winner of this season. I think if Jay is in the end, he's going to be the winner. But the problem for Jay is that he's got to make it through three more rounds, and that's just incredibly difficult. So Alex, let's start with you. Who do you think is going to win this season?
Who do I think is going to win? I guess Adam is going to win based on kind of like the complete package that I've seen. I mean, I feel like Jay is also a really strong candidate, but I don't necessarily feel like David has gotten the arc that I feel like a lot of people have. Most people I've seen have said they feel like David's the front runner to win. And I guess there haven't been any episodes where David hasn't had a confessional per se, but there's certainly been episodes where I felt like, wow, was David even here? Like there have been more episodes where I felt like David, you know, either didn't show up on my screen in any major context or whatever than pretty much with any of the other groups. So, I mean, for that reason, I'm like hesitant to go ahead and say David's the front runner. Also, like they've been talking about how he's the clear favorite to win. I mean, when your name's being thrown around like that at Final Eight is so, you know, it would be bizarre to see him make it to Final Three without winning immunities, which would be equally bizarre to see him winning multiple immunities. So I don't know. I think Adam or Jay, I think particularly Adam, because I feel like we spent a lot of time with him and we're very invested in his story. But again, I mean, you know, we would always be with Adam's considering Adam's story.
Yeah. Brent, what do you think? Who do you think is going to win this season?
I feel like David is the winner of this season. I feel like Adam, as much as I would love to see him win, is getting the Spencer edit where it's like the likable underdog that you root for who has a great, great full story. I'm talking about Spencer 1.0, not 2.0. I feel like, you know, he's probably going to get cut at the final five or the final four, which would be equally heartbreaking, but still a fulfilling journey. But I think that David is the winner of the season. I just think that the signs are pointing to that. I feel like that all season long we've seen his story. I feel like the fly in the ointment as far as the players go is Ken's relationship with David. he's never been able to cut bait with that relationship. I know in the last podcast, he considered it where he was like, you know, we'll throw the votes at, or we'll get Jay to play his immunity idol, and then we'll throw the votes at David. And Ken didn't necessarily poo-poo that idea right away. That's twice in one podcast I said poo-poo. I'm not going to say it again. I feel like that Ken, his inability to cut bait with David and get rid of him is probably going to be the story of this season, because if he doesn't do that, that means David's going to make it to the final three, and I feel like David is your likely winner then. So I don't, it's so interesting with a player like Ken, because, you know, all of us gamers, and I'm on, maybe I shouldn't even include myself in that, because as I've watched myself over the last 2 years of podcasting, I've become more and more convinced that while I do love strategy, I feel like I would make emotional moves, and I'm not immune to that, you know? So I feel like dealing with somebody like Ken, who isn't necessarily a hardcore gamer, who can't necessarily, you know, not see the forest for the trees, I feel like he may have a problem cutting or getting rid of a friendship like David, because he gave him his word. And how do you play with somebody like that? You know, you can say that he's a threat to your blue in the face, but Ken's honor and integrity, quote unquote, means more to him than some silly $1 million. And how do you resolve that when you're playing with somebody like Ken? I feel like that's an interesting proposition.
Apparently. Taryn, who do you think is going to win the season?
I think it's David. I think that...
in agreement.
Looking at the edit, looking at David's edit in particular, like, he has the strongest, like, classic edit, so to speak. Like, he hasn't had any negative content since the very first episode, basically. He has... he's been very consistently visible in all of the episodes. He has the most trackable story arc throughout the entire season. And when you look at, like, the content he's getting now, even though he had a weaker episode in the last one, it was still like, it was people like Hannah saying, you know, we could take out David right now, but I really love David and I don't want to cut him. And I think, like, that's giving David agency in a situation where he had none. And I think that kind of thing is important to show the winner as far as the edit goes for them. And so, like, as far as that goes, I think it's David. I don't really want it to be David because of that, because I have been sort of thinking, I thought it was Ken for a little while, but I thought David was close behind. And, you know, I felt like it's probably David for a while now. It kind of feels like, the last season that I enjoyed this much, Cagayan, where, like, I was going to that finale, as I think a lot of people were, thinking this must be Wu, because it can't be Tony, because Tony had way too much negative content throughout the entire season. And, like, I really want it to be Tony this time, you know, like, I really want it to be Adam, because I feel like Adam had this a few stumbles on his way to the end, and I love that he was able to recover from them. And I really like how his story has been portrayed. And, like, just on a personal level, like, just like, can you imagine how emotional it will be if Adam wins this thing for his mom? Like, I have never been so personally invested in somebody winning in, like, outside of strategy, and at least since I was, like, a kid. Like, I'm so pulling for Adam. So I'm really hoping it's Adam, but I really feel like it has to be David. And I don't think Jay has a chance. I think that he has a great story for like the position that he's in, but I don't see him winning.
Well, can we talk about Jay really quickly? Sorry, mm-hmm. I didn't mean to interrupt. I feel like Jay's story is coming to a close because he played his immunity idol. Was there a way during the last episode that he could have deduced that I shouldn't play my idol at this point? They're not really going to throw four throwaway votes against me and not be able to control the vote? Or was he just convinced that all six of them were sort of united and that it was going to be four votes on Jay, two votes on David, and then he could do whatever the heck he wanted to? I mean, was there a way for him to figure this out? Because if he had been able to keep that idol, I feel like his story is a lot more interesting than what it probably is.
I don't think we can blame him, Alex Kidwell. Do you?
Yeah, well, I think it's a really, really good question. I think the problem is that if you look at, you know, Jay's been talking for weeks now about, no one wants to play with me. I'm like the Black Plague out here, right? Like, he can't get people to want to, you know, meet him on an even playing field and like give him, you know, real talk. So I think the problem is that besides Adam, who obviously was going to kind of put him in this position, the only people who I think were shooting him any degree of straight were Brett and Sunday. And based on how they voted, they were definitely in on some kind of Jay vote split, I think, because they voted one Jay and the other David. So I think the problem is the only people willing to talk to him are in on it. So he really, I mean, that tells me that it really was like, you know, at some point, six people came together and agreed to split the vote on Jay, and then another plan came together. I guess the best thing you could do is just be Sandra and like get in the bushes and overhear that thing. You know what I mean? I, you know, other than that.
Yeah. I mean, it's so hard.
He's a stupid idiot.
Okay.
Yeah. It's hard because the other thing, too, Brent, is that not just that he's got an idol, but like he's already so threatening. So if you're Jay, you realize, hey, I'm probably the biggest threat out here right now. They're probably going to try to, you know, they got a free shot at me. They're probably going to take it. So I think for him, it's so tough to not. And let's say hypothetically, he doesn't play the idol and, you know, Adam gets his way and he does, you know, go home. I think he's kicking himself for the rest of time. So,
yeah.
And when you look at that scenario, it's like the ideal situation from his perspective. And I think from like a lot of people's perspective is like, obviously you can just put the votes on Jay and then you get David out, who is the person you should be getting out that week. So from his perspective, it's like, what incentive do they have to not do it? Like, it's not like they need to fake me out in order to what? Get out Sunday? Like, is he going to think, like, are they really tricking me in order to get out Sunday? That's not particularly likely. So I definitely see, like, I would have played that idea.
Yeah, yeah. The smart move for that, like, the other people would have been to go, like, who would have predicted that? Yeah, like Taryn is saying, like, targeting Sunday is such a stupid move. So
no, I disagree with that. Let's talk about
then
that.
Okay, then why?
Because I heard Rob in the last podcast talking about this. I feel like that it's Adam needs to make sure that he doesn't target David. I feel like at this particular vote going into a final six, because if he targets David, now it's Ken, Hannah, and Adam with Sunday, Brett, and Jay. And Sunday, Brett, and Jay have been very close all the way back to that third tribe. I can't remember the name of it. Somebody help me out. The green one where they invented it.
Kapula.
Thank you very much. I knew that was something like that. So, like, you're going into a final six there. Well, yeah, maybe Brett and Sunday are willing to vote with you, but do they really want to leave themselves on the bottom of the numbers? I feel like Adam doesn't want to put himself in a potential rock draw situation again going into final six. I feel like he needs to make sure that he has control of the vote. And by not voting out David at final seven, he has control of the vote at final six. He doesn't have to worry about the way things are going to go. But I feel like if things happen the way you guys said, which was Jay plays his idol, David goes home, now all of a sudden Adam's trusting in other people a lot more than he would be with the former situation. So I feel like it wasn't a bad call on Adam's part.
I agree with you. I think it's a good call on Adam's part. I was just going to say that I think, like, at least from my perspective, like, the story wants to give the credit to Hannah, and I don't like the move for Hannah.
Horrible for Hannah.
I feel like Hannah needs Sunday. Like, I look around and I'm like, if Hannah wants to win this thing, Sunday's like the given. And again, I mean, you know, for all I know, she's just gotten the most unfair edit ever, and she actually
needs
Hannah. But
right.
Well, I do want to disagree. I disagree with what Brent said about the numbers, because I feel like the situation he's in now is one where David, Ken, and Hannah are potentially a tighter three than he is with them, and he is the one that has Brett and Sunday. So like. Or Brett and Jay. And so that could turn into a stalemate, or he has to go with those three in order to take out Jay, which he does because he has to take out Jay. And now again, he's stuck on the outside of a three with just Brett. And so I feel like, I don't think Brett and Sunday are going to stick with Jay. Like, I don't think that's where they want to go. They've said that they want to be with Adam. They see Adam as somebody who's somewhat equal to them when it comes to jury threateningness. And so I think they definitely stick with Adam there. And then Adam has those two plus Jay as somebody that's expendable that they can take out. And if like best case scenario, they take out Jay the next week and then it's 3-on-2. And he has these two perfect people to be sitting in the end with. I think it was definitely the better move for Adam to get David out.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
No, but Brett, you saw in the episode. No, Brent, I'm going to go.
No, go ahead.
Really quick. I just want to say, we saw in the episode too, Brett he was talking to Adam and he said, hey, look, we can't beat Jay. He knows it can't go to the end with Jay. He knows we're going to have to flip on him at some point. If I'm Brett and Sunday and I'm there with Adam and Jay. I'm a lot more scared of Jay than I am of Adam. So I'm with Taryn. I think it was the right move.
First of all, I feel like Brett is a very good ass kisser. Like he does it a lot to people. Like, well, you know, I knew we had to take him out, or I know we have to take him out. Or, I know, you know, like he says that a lot just to make people feel comfortable with him. I don't know that he necessarily believes half the stuff that he's saying. As far as Taryn's argument goes, that goes in with the with Adam's perception that the other three are tighter than him. I feel like his relationship with Hannah is tighter than a lot of, than it's really being portrayed. So Adam doesn't feel like it's David and Hannah and Ken together, and Adam's on the outside looking forth. You know, I feel like if that were true and he saw the situation as that, then I feel like it is right for him to make the move to get rid of David. But given that he sees himself a lot closer to Hannah and David's on the outside of that, I feel like this is the correct move.
But even then, like, even if he does have Hannah, it's still a somewhat disadvantaged position, because if David and Ken do get some advantage, like if Brett and Jay say, like, all right, well, we need to take out, you know, somebody from that other side, or if David and Ken get some sort of power, they bring in Brett or Jay, God forbid, like, then they're definitely choosing Hannah over Adam. Whereas if you're putting Brett and Sunday in the power position, they're definitely choosing Adam over Jay when it comes to, like, who am I bringing to the end? And I think they'll choose Adam over pretty much anybody. And so I think that he just has a lot more power with David gone, especially because David is probably his biggest threat beyond Jay.
I feel like we just have to make sure we look at the game from the perspective of Adam and the players within the game with Adam. We're looking at Adam's game from the perspective of the TV screen, where we see his brother, we see him talking about his mother, we see all the things the challenges, the things that he wanted to check off on his survivor resume. I feel like the players don't care about any of that shit. Like, they're just looking at the personal relationships and bonds they formed with him. And I feel like that Adam doesn't necessarily see himself, and the players don't see himself as a big threat on the board. So, you know, I don't feel like he needs to necessarily worry about being voted out in favor of somebody like Hannah. From his perspective and from the other players' perspective, they might look at Adam and Hannah and go, huh? You know, I don't know. I'm not sure.
I think getting rid of Sunday was a bad idea, because Sunday and Brett were like, oh yeah, well, like, we can beat Adam. Let's go forward with him.
Exactly. Sunday and Brett wanted to take Adam, and like, when you compare Adam and Jay, it's all of them want Jay out. Like they've all wanted Jay out.
I know, but
I
feel like you're just taking what Sunday and Brett said to Adam at the well as.
I'm not taking it. Saying they both said that, and everybody has been gunning for Jay and will continue to gun for Jay. There's no, like, they will never take Jay over Adam. And then, like, if you look at it both from a jury standpoint and a relationship standpoint, David and Ken are both closer to Hannah than they are to Adam, and they would probably also take Hannah over Adam to the jury.
Alex Kidwell, you have the final say on this.
No, I mean, I think you both make really good points, because
he agrees with me, though. So, Taryn, you lose. Girl, bye.
Well, I think, to me, what's interesting, what I've been trying to rack my brain about is, like, you know, we talked about, you know, certainly this summer with Big Brother, when Davon is like, I don't want to be in a Final Five with two showmances. And we're like, girl, yes, you do. That's a great spot. Like, I've been trying to recognize, is it better to be in a Final Five with two pairs in a Big Brother finale that's going to two, or is it even more advantageous in a Survivor finale that's going to three? I mean, I guess in a Survivor finale that's going to three, you only have two more rounds to survive, but you know, also going to a final three with a pair doesn't necessarily, like, they won't necessarily split votes either. So I don't know. It's a little interesting. Like, there's a couple of different reasons why it could go either way, I think.
What makes it beneficial in Big Brother is that either side can get power, and it will go back and forth, and it goes down to two. So if one of those pairs gets taken out at Final Five, then you can pair up with the other person and go after the remaining pair at Final Four. Whereas in Survivor, the pair that you side with to take out the other side is that's essentially where you're going to stay, unless that other person, but that other person has a huge window to be like, all right, you just took out my pair, but now we can team up and take out the swing vote who had all the power that made the move last week.
Yeah,
and so it's a worse spot to be in, I think.
All right, let's get into some of your questions, guys. You can send those in by using hashtag #RehappyHour on Twitter. Let's go to this one. This one's from Matt Forsyth. Matt says, recently Survivor has been trending towards casting more fans. Would you like to see more fans on Big Brother, and will that ever happen? Alex, I will throw that to you.
Well, I mean, I've always said that I feel like I'm down to see more fans. And certainly I feel like this year we've gotten good examples of recruits who were able to prove they were good at the game and examples of some super fans who really demonstrated that not all super fans are, you know, strategically oriented. There's plenty of huge fans of Big Brother out there that aren't necessarily going to be any good at the game. But I still lean towards I want to see people in there that know what they're doing and are hungry to win, because I feel like more often than not, like, you can cast a recruit and get lucky, but and have them, you know, work out and have them, you know, be someone who, you know, learns the game and takes off. But you're taking a chance. Whereas, like, the thing, if you can really like properly vet someone who's already a fan of the game and really determine that this is someone who's going to come out, like, I have to like believe with certain casting choices, like with a Derek, they were like, all right, this guy's gonna be really good at the game. Like, they just, you know, certain people are gonna give you that impression, and you know, pretty overwhelmingly, I think, in some cases. So, you know, I just keep going back to the Big Brother Canada 3, you know, to Jordan's season, where everyone said, like, you know, too many super fans, and that's why this one. I just think if that season didn't have twists, like, there were so many alliances being made, there was so much going on, there was like a new group being formed every week. Like, that's what I love to see. That's awesome. I think that this final six is a product of that too, where we see so many different little, like, you know, truster clusters, whatever the hell you want to call it, with, like, you know, everyone's got a twosome or a threesome, or, like, you know, Hannah's made like inroads with everyone who's out there. Like, I think that to me is like the thing that, you know, kind of illustrates that someone knows this game, is that they're not sitting on any majorities, really. They're just like, they're always trying to slightly improve their odds, and I like that.
Yeah, and when you look at a large part of what makes the season great, it's that so many people are playing from so many different angles, and that's why we're getting such an interesting, complicated season. And when you look at the casts, look at the last two Big Brother seasons, they were very recruit heavy, and they were pretty bad casts overall. I mean, the one we saw in Big Brother OTT, like, maybe was somewhat good, but like, when you look at this cast, this cast is a very fan heavy cast, and a lot of these good Survivor casts have been very fan heavy. They don't need to be super fans, they don't need to be obsessed with the show, but people who are familiar with the show they're always going to have a higher chance of being more entertaining and better at the game, I think, and make for a better season. And we don't need to be worried. Like, this season is full of people who would, I think, largely be considered game bots, because they're always thinking about strategy, and they're caring less about genuine, you know, relationships. But that's making for a great season, because genuine relationships will happen. Like, you can't avoid them. And so you're getting the best of both worlds, essentially. And we're seeing a lot of really great, like, the relationship between Adam and Jay has just been like one of the most fantastically edited and like told stories in a reality TV season in a while, I think. And that's coming from both standpoints, where they're like, they're vehemently opposed to each other in the game strategically, but they're still bonding over these really emotional and personal things. And I think that's what, like, when you can get both of those things, that's what makes a season great.
Well, I feel like that it's a reflection of the mechanism of the game, though, when we're talking about is it, you know, better to cast super fans or, you know, recruits, or what, you know, how would you want a season to play out from a cast perspective? Because something like Survivor, where, you know, anybody can flip on any side at any given time, you know, that is the beauty of the game. Somebody like Will, I feel like on a Big Brother game, would be a little more quiet. But on Survivor, at any moment, he can wake up and decide, you know what? I'm going to screw with the game today. You know what? I'm going to flip at Final Nine. I'm going to make my move because this is what I want to do. And he does it. Whereas on a Big Brother season, you're at the mercy of the head of household. You know, there's a lot less room to play the game that you want to have happen, because you're at the mercy of who's controlling the votes. From a head of household perspective, you know, what happens with the veto, things like that. So I don't know that it's necessarily an apples to apples comparison. And I do want to talk about Will sometimes. So hopefully we get a question about him.
We did get one, Brent.
Good. And, all right. Well, then I'll shut up about it. But yeah, as far as super fans go, I feel like Survivor, because of the mechanism of the game, it's easier to cast super fans. I'm sorry. I do hear what you're saying about Big Brother Canada 3. But the super fans on there, you know, disregarding the twist for a moment, I feel like all of them together, it did make things a bit quiet. And I feel like that everyone was playing cautious, and I don't like
cautious. Because there were twists.
I don't know, but they didn't know the twists were all coming. Like, I mean, Jordan, you were on that season.
We didn't know all the twists were coming.
Things were crazy in the beginning until the twists happened. Things were very
alliances were being made left and right. Ginger Ninjas sitting down to like a group dinner in the kitchen and like telling people who's not in the alliance.
Godfrey's making final two deals left and right.
No, but Ginger
things in the bathroom.
I think though, however, if you think about those moments, and I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, those moments where those big things happen, where Ginger Ninja is saying, he's like, yeah, bro, so, you know, Beely, she's going home this week. You're not in the alliance. It's so-and-so and so-and-so. He's saying that. And then, you know, people are talking about, like, Cindy's in the bathroom saying, oh, yeah, we got to get rid of all the guys. And Kevin overhears it because he's in the bathroom. Those people making those mistakes were not recruits, but people who were, like, they, you know, were somewhat familiar with the show, but were not super fans.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But those, like, also weren't strong strategic moments. They may have been good drama. But like they didn't add to the strategy of the game.
And what made those first couple of weeks great was the combination of people being really being really bad and all the stuff going on around it. And again, like when you talk about somebody like Ginger Ninja, he was and Cindy, they were familiar with the show. And that's really all I'm asking for is, like, you know, have some familiarity with the show before you get cast. You know what I mean? Like, just like have a decent idea of what to do in the game, because then we get people who aren't afraid to be more aggressive. And that's what I like to see. And when, going back to the format, I don't think Survivor is a better format for somebody like Will to just wake up out of nowhere, because he has to wait for a moment where he's the swing vote, essentially. Like, he is at the mercy of a majority, and the majority controls the votes all the time. Whereas
I feel like that's true. No, because I feel like...
If there's a majority that's unbreakable, there's nothing he can do. That's why Pugongings exist.
Right,
but in Big Brother, he can win a competition and shake up the whole game. Or he can change one person's mind who won a competition and have them shake up the game.
Right,
and that's why we often see shakeups in Big Brother more often.
Will by himself obviously can't change the game, but he has friendships and bonds with other people that he's counting on. So he knew that going to Hannah, he could say, look, Hannah, we're not getting the respect we deserve. Let's do something together. Me, you, Ken, let's make this happen. You know, and he was able to move hearts and minds. He's
but
not
he
just doing it by himself.
Vote.
He's still not. He's making other people do his bidding. Like, why are you fighting with me on that? I mean, like, you know,
it was a 4-4 vote, and he was the one swing.
They would have voted out any person that he wanted. Whatever you want, Will, we'll do it.
That's what I'm saying. He waited until he was the swing vote. I don't know what you're saying.
Okay, let's jump to the next question.
I'm saying that he can't do this. He can't do the move by himself. Gosh.
Okay, here's the next question. Go ahead, Alex.
No, bitch. I get the last word.
No. It's not going to be about Will at all. I want to put a pin on the recruit superfan thing.
I think, good.
You know, like it doesn't have to be 0 or 10, right? Like, there's a balance. Like, we can find that balance.
I
think Taryn makes a good point when he says, like, the Ginger Ninja, like, he knew what Big Brother was. He had tried to get on the season before, so certainly he'd watched some stuff. He's somewhat familiar. I think, like, can we find more Helens out there? You know, this person had never watched feeds, but was a fan of Big Brother, came on like very enthusiastic to play, really trying to figure out the game. And like, you know, Andy too. Andy hadn't watched feeds. I think there's been a lot of players who really came in to play the game and, you know, just have some knowledge of what this is, I think. Like, let's just not recruit any more people from Tinder. That's all I ask.
Yeah. It's people you know the rules of the game. Know what immunity is. Know what an immunity idol does. Like, if you don't know that stuff.
Yeah, you don't have to know what a Tyler Perry idol is, but. Like,
right.
Yeah.
You know that the veto holder can't be nominated. I think we got that this season.
Yeah, how many people play in POV? Like, that'd be good to know.
Know when you actually have to go vote. Messiah. Like, oh, wait, we don't vote now? What? Wait.
And, like, I think that there's a mentality in the fan base, probably even more so in Survivor than Big Brother, that encourages people to be aggressive and to go for the win. And that's like the key ingredient, I think, in the fan in the fan casting, where it's like they don't want to go there and just like sit around and hope they make it far because they're on TV. They want to actively play the game to win, because that they know that's not only probably the best way to win, but also the best way to be a popular character on TV. So, like, just have some familiarity with the show, and then it's gonna make for a better character. Like, 90%.
I feel like we all agree for the most part that we like a mix, but I do feel like Survivor is more inclusive as far as super fans go, because there's more room to play. But obviously, Taryn doesn't agree with me on that, and I take your point.
Okay. And then also you've got the 39-day factor in that, like, people who are a super fan of Survivor who might also be like a rocket scientist can't go play Big Brother because they're not going to have their rocket science gig when they come back from a 100-day game. So that's definitely a factor.
Okay, let's take this next question. This one is from Ivan Verdoliak. Ivan says, how would you rank David, Adam, Jay, and Ken as a winner based on their overall game they've played so far? So regardless of, like, let's say, I mean, hypothetically, let's just go about the winners that we talked about, who we thought were going to win. So Alex is saying he thinks Adam is going to win. Taryn and Brent, you guys both say you think, and I also said I think David is going to win. For the record, I want Adam to win, but I think David is going to win. But let's just talk about this in terms of the grand scheme of things. Where does Adam rank as a Survivor winner for you, Alex Kidwell, if he is indeed the winner of this season?
I actually think the list you just presented is already in order. David, Adam, Jay, Ken. I think that's pretty much like the order I would rank them as winners. I think David controlled the most in the way of like what direction, you know, like I always look at it like, you know, Rob talks about like who steered the ship. And it's like, yeah, I mean, if this season was, you know, a voyage from the start line to the finish line, somebody like decided where the finish line would be over the course. Like it may have gone in circles and not taken a direct path, but ultimately it got to a point. And who spent the most time at the wheel? I think it was David. You know, it was David and Zeke. And then David won that battle. So I think because of that, if you don't get rid of David, David is the best, is the front runner to win and the best winner if he wins. And at that point, I think it goes down the line in terms of who had the heaviest hand in creating this scenario that we're at now. And I think that really is the order. It's David who did the most in terms of securing a majority and manipulating the vote. Then Adam, who did kind of the most after the David Zeke fallout to, you know, build up and do that. Then Jay, who really has like played a, you know, very much of a free agent game, but really has, you know, persevered and survived. And like, if he gets himself to the end, there's an argument to be made. And then probably Ken, who a lot of getting there would probably be less a product of his own successes than the fact that there were so many other threats out there that people didn't carry his winning immunities and other things like that.
Brent, if David is the winner of this season, where does he rank among the 33 winners of this game?
I mean, I feel like he ranks in the top 10, maybe even the top 5. I really love the way he just balled out. Like, I still go back to that Lucy vote, and I know it's like ages ago that he did that. But you have to remember, from his perspective, he was not necessarily in control of the entire tribe when he decided to do that. And he put himself in a position where he was still in a minority by playing the idol. Like, he could count on, you know, two fingers the allies that he had by playing that idol. But you know what? He didn't care. He just played it. He knew he wanted to save Jessica. He didn't care if the majority of the tribe was mad at him. I love that kind of play where it's just balls to the wall. I really don't care how this is going to affect my long-term game. I need to do this today. I'm going to, you know, seize the day and do it. And he did it. And of course, now he found an idol the next day. But there's no guarantee he's going to do that. And then again, he played his idol on somebody else. I love this season the fact that the people have been willing to play idols on other people and not just hogging them to themselves, you know, for 36 days until they get to day 36 and get to wear it around their neck. I mean, it's not a prop. You're supposed to use it, you know, as a tool within the game. And I feel like this season, David has done that the best. Adam would be an amazing winner, but I feel like he's more of a TV winner. Like, from a TV perspective, that would be glorious. As far as the game goes, this game has been interesting, almost equivalent to David's, but I feel like he hasn't made some of the personal bonds that David has made within the game with the people he needs to in order to win. I feel like his win at the end would be a little bit more of a scratching and clawing to make sure he got the votes. As far as Jay goes, I feel like we've seen that game before. Like, didn't Mike Holloway play that game? Like, if he wins 3 immunities and gets to the end, you know, I've already seen what a challenge beast looks like when they win and win their way to the end. And obviously, I think we're all going to rank Ken 4th. Until I see more from Ken, until I learn what he's thinking, he has to make one big move. If he can make one big move and cut David at some point, I feel like that would give him enough of standing to claim victory.
Taryn, what's your take on all this?
Well, I'm gonna go a little differently, I think, because I do think David has played a good game. I also think Adam has played a very good game too, though. I like the way I see it. If one of them wins, it's because they probably outplayed the other one at the end. And so, like, I'm not looking at it as like, I don't think David is necessarily a better winner than Adam would be. I think that David has made some big mistakes, especially early on in the game, and he's been at the mercy of some forces beyond himself. Which he's gotten through largely because of his relationships, but also because people have decided to target somebody else first, or people have decided to make moves that are against their best interest. And so I don't think that he's necessarily controlled a lot, but I do appreciate the relationships he's made. I like the ballsiness of the idol plays. So I do think that he would be a good winner, probably not top five or anything like that, but a very good winner. But I also think Adam has been a very good winner as well. I think that he has made some mistakes as well. I think that like almost everything he did with Taylor was just like really big flaws in his game. He wasn't able to read Taylor, but he was able to bounce back really well. And I like the perception that he gives to other people because they don't see him as a threat, even though he probably really is. And as far as that goes, he's never really been in a lot of danger, whereas David has been in the line of fire quite often because he made it very obvious that he was a jury threat, with the breaking down and talking about how much he appreciates this journey that he's been on, and now he feels better. He doesn't think everything's out to kill him. He's presenting this story to people before the end of the game, and that's why they all see him as this big threat, and that's why he's in a lot of danger to go home toward this final stretch. Whereas Adam has been much more under the radar. He's been much more he's kept this story about his mother to himself. I think a large part of that is because he knows that that would make him a big threat going down to the end of the game. But he has managed to form some relationships with people like Hannah. And especially the thing that I really, really, really like from Adam is the relationship with Jay, because Jay has been his rival, his adversary this whole time. And he has formed a connection with Jay, this very personal connection, opening up about his mother, where it was a big risk because Jay can turn around and use that against him. But I don't think it's going to be used against him. And Jay is going to go to that jury being his number one enemy, and he is going to be his number one advocate in the jury. And I think that's a really, really powerful thing. So that's why I really love that move from Adam, even though it wasn't really even a move. It's just part of his nature and his story. And that's, I really like Adam's game in that sense. And I really think he would also be a very good winner, especially like everything that he's done to get to that point and to win Jay over and to win the jury over. I think it would be really, really good.
You don't think that's going to come back to bite him telling Jay about his mom?
I don't think so. I don't think Jay will use it against him. I really think Jay respects it a lot. Looking at the secret scenes and
pulling
like the
pulling the buff over his head. Yeah, like that.
Well, okay. Yeah, I agree.
Go to the jury.
I agree today that he's not going to use it against him. Tomorrow, when he loses immunity and is looking at like, well, I've got, who are we going to target besides myself? Who can I make bigger than myself? I feel like at that point, he's going to reveal it. He has to reveal it if he's playing the game right.
I don't think he does.
But he should, though. He should. He should reveal to the other players that that's what Adam told him.
But even then, like, let's say it's common knowledge that Adam's mom was going through this. Would Adam still be perceived as big of a threat as David?
It still has to be Jay first, right?
It's like Jeremy with the kid, like, you know, you anything that can scare anybody about going to the final tribal council with somebody is something you have to be wary of. You know, anytime anybody has a personal story that they can connect to themselves, that's something that people can grab onto, and you don't want to give people that edge. So if Jay's playing the game and he loses immunity at final six, I feel like he has to tell the other players about what Adam told him. You know, if he doesn't and he's the better man than I, fine. But I feel like he should, and I feel like he will.
I don't think he needs to. I personally don't. I mean, I don't know what Taryn or Alex, you guys think about that.
No, Alex, do you think he's going? I don't think he does.
Alex, what do you think?
I don't think he will, but I don't, you know, we've seen it before. Like, you know, I definitely think, you know, if you have things and you're going out the door, it behooves you to try things. So right. I don't think it's like out of the realm of possibility. Oh, but you know, while we're on the subject, I do want to just add, like, I like that this season has had so many people like playing idols on other people, and like a lot of the kind of knee jerk, like at least casual fan reaction is like, why would you do that? Don't waste the idol on the other person. But it's like, it's not necessarily a selfless play. You know, I think that's what's really cool, and what's always on, you know, what's great about that is you can sell it as a selfless play, but it's actually a very selfish move. The person we saw play idols on other people more than anyone, Russell Hance, one of the most selfish players to ever play the game. Keep hope alive. Be the game.
It's kind of like having a gun with a single bullet, and there's a fully loaded gun on the floor, and you use your single bullet to ensure that you get the loaded gun, as opposed to being like, well, I need to keep this one bullet just in case I don't get the loaded gun. You know what I mean? Like, once you have the numbers, you are in a much better position than just having a one singular idol.
No, not this way.
I prefer for them to have a singularity. I'm just saying.
I would love for more singularity. So,
all right, let's take this question from a friend of the show, Edward Morris, Edmo. Edmo says, when season 33 is said and done, what will this season be remembered for? Alex Kidwell, what do you think that's going to be? I mean, the people playing the idols and other people, I think that's something that we'll remember from this one.
I think the cast, top to bottom, just being very, very strong. I think this, I wouldn't be surprised if this is a cast that we see multiple people return from. I think, you know, looking back on Kagayan, which is a season a lot of people like, the two things that I feel like a lot of people go to are like, well, the three things. Tony is a winner. The greatness of the cast, kind of top to bottom, how there's very, very few casting duds. And then kind of the unpredictable nature of the season. And I think kind of this really hits all those. We have yet to see who's going to win the game. Obviously, it can't be someone as crazy and entertaining as Tony. I don't think that option's on the board. But I think we also don't have any options as bad. Like, what was the final six of Kagayan? Could Jeremiah have won at that point? Like, we don't have any terrible options either.
I think we remember Adam and Jay. I think we remember like the cast as a whole, and hopefully we remember like a good outcome, a good strategic winner. But you know, who knows? Maybe it's remembered for, you know, maybe it's remembered as that season that Ken won. That was great right up until the end.
I feel like that we'll remember all of the great gameplay coming down the stretch here. On a slightly negative view, my one negative thing to say about this season, the fact that it's so bro heavy that all of the women, and not just women, but women of color, got voted off early on. Survivor went out of their way to cast women and women of color on this season. And somehow we ended up with an all white 13 member merge. So I don't know that that's necessarily a good legacy to for the season to take forward. And I've brought this up before. Some people kind of poo-poo and say, oh, that was just a reflection of the game. But I also remember what Michaela said during her interview when she was asked this question. And they said, you know, did you notice that all of the women of color consistently got voted off pre-merge? And she said, you know what? I did notice it. And it's not it attacking anyone in particular, but you go with what's comfortable. You go with what you know. And the fact that all these women got voted off is a reflection on the bonds that they may or may not made and other people made with them. And I feel like the Survivor could even do more. They could even do more to cast a more diverse game to reflect America as it stands today. So that's, I'll get off my soapbox. No more Brent's soapbox this week.
No, yeah. I mean, I think that's something that's been touched on all season. And the person to me who I feel like really hit it the best of Rob's guest this season was PG. I thought she really was on point. And she kind of echoed what you just said, Brent, about kind of this idea that it's not necessarily inherent. Like, no one's going out there looking to segregate or be, you know, in any way, you know, biased, you know, to this degree, but you're playing a sociological game and people's natural predilections are to, you know, join and align with people who either, you know, represent like people who are similar to people they know in real life or people who share a lot of commonalities. And, you know, more often than not, that's going to come down to, you know, background, because shared background is what creates shared experiences, and shared background that'll often come down to like, how were you raised? And a lot of times how you were raised, there's a lot of like socioeconomic and other issues that come up with that, that just create a dynamic whereby, you know, people might be more likely to make votes that right on their surface look like, well, that's what was the purpose of this other than just like this seems like there's bias. What's the other reason for it? And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, sometimes, and I totally get it. And we've heard from plenty of people who've gone out pre-merge, like, I just felt like there was nobody on my tribe that I could relate to. And it's like, well, I mean, they probably didn't cast anyone out there who's like people you're used to dealing with in your personal life. So I think, yeah, it's a very interesting point. And I really like the way like PG especially touched on it this season.
All right, let's take this question from Mike Bloom. Mike says, thoughts on Jeff Probst's conscientious T tweet. Did you guys see this tweet?
Oh no! What did
he just tweeted out the letter T like a day and a half ago for no reason, and he left it up there, and people have just like commented about it, and he hasn't elaborated. It's just the letter.
No,
T.
He has since elaborated. He has since elaborated. Alex, breaking news are happening now. So Jeff Probst tweeted T. So John Cryer, John Cryer of Matt.
He tweeted shade today, and then he.
I guess it was yesterday. Maybe it was yesterday. John Cryer of 2.5 Men fame said, at Jeff Probst, are you okay? And Jeff said, ha, just got the new, just not, no, no, this is what he said verbatim. Ha, just not the new MacBook Pro. Must be the keyboard. He meant to say just got, I think. And he said, must be the keyboard. And clearly he's making more mistakes. So I think that's what happened. So
there's nothing here.
Jeff and his text speak.
There's a T.
It was just a T. It just didn't make sense. I don't understand. And Jeff, I don't understand why you wouldn't just delete that. Instead, it's still up. It's just T.
This keyboard, it creates a lot of problems. He can't figure out how to delete things with this keyboard. So you got to cut him some slack here. He's no millennial.
There's a response from Richard Plummer on Twitter, and it's a picture of that Geico commercial where Ice-T is selling lemonade. And I see it's just like, and it says, nah, it's lemonade. That's perfect.
Let's take this.
Ask question. The will question. You said there's a will question.
Oh, yeah. We had a will question. Sorry.
Who had the audacity to something?
Who had the audacity to ask a will question? That's big. Well, apparently. Before we get to the will question, let's take this one from Logan Adair. Logan says, who was the biggest surprise this season? Alex?
Biggest surprise. That's a good question. I mean, I think you could go with David because of the way he's had a good, like Brian Gold pointed out in the chat room. It's kind of like the Cathy Vavrick O'Brien arc a little bit, where it's like, we haven't seen this one for a while. Almost, maybe Holly Hoffman as well. It's like your first 3 or 6 days, it's like, oh man, this person is a disaster. Like they are, I've never seen someone scream pre-merge so much. And then before you know it, it's like, oh, they're finding allies somehow. And now they're like building a block and now they're like playing the game. And it's like, oh, I never thought this person would get another chance with these people that they had burned their bridges so badly at the beginning. You know, whether it's David like freaking out over the stick bug and people are like, this guy's going to be no help in challenges. Or like Holly throwing Dan's alligator shoes in the lake. There's just certain things you can do on the first couple of days to just put yourself deep into a hole. And it's always interesting to me to see seasons where someone does that and then is still able to somehow dig their way out.
Go ahead, Taryn.
I think Michaela was the biggest surprise for me. Like when I look at all of these people, I thought Adam, I thought this was probably going to be Adam. I thought David had this upside. I thought Zeke was going to be Zeke, but Michaela is the one that like she really popped this. Like she was the star of the pre-merge, and I don't know. Like I'm sure there were people that saw it coming, but I don't know that I did. And I thought she was like way more fantastic than like anyone else on the cast at the time. Yeah. And so Michaela was the biggest surprise to me.
I thought Michaela was good. I wouldn't have expected Chris to be anything like, you know, we've seen enough like big athletic type guys, I think, like Chris to think like, oh, well, this guy's just going to be a meathead. But I think like, even though he didn't get much of that edit, like Chris, he represents something interesting to me because I guess, you know, like a John Rocker, he can go out there and dominate the challenges, but he was also like there to play strategically. I feel like that's a type I'm always interested to see, like the Hulk who can actually like think, like that's good.
Yeah, I don't know that I can co-sign the Chris comment. Yeah. I feel like I always expected that from him. Plus, he's an attorney. I feel like the show probably expected what they got from him. I was going to say Michaela, but since Taryn took it, I'll say Jessica. I really feel like that Jessica was very interesting. Somebody that I really felt a lot of empathy for during the rock draw. I could just feel her angst. Like, it's amazing to me how threatened that some people were by Jessica. They were just, they thought she was like, oh my gosh, we have to get her out. And I'm like, really? Like, Jessica, like you gotta get rid of her. So someone fun to watch. And maybe I love players that really can broadcast their empathy over the airwaves to a point where even I feel it. I feel like that's the show when it's at its best.
I think I'd want to target her before I caught pink eye too.
I can't believe I forgot Jay. I feel like Jay has been a huge surprise too. Like I don't think anybody saw Jay coming in this way, where like he is such a
I picked him on my team. So
but I do remember like at that moment, like I don't think he took him too early. And I do think like, I know I was saying it, and I don't remember if all four of us were having the conversation or not, but like, I was like, I can't choose between this Taylor and this Jay. They look the same for me.
Oh, yeah.
Aesthetic
Man,
I was wrong on that.
I think I called Jay like Pete Bro 2.0. I don't think we because Jay is essentially like he is like some weird combination of like Malcolm and who's the one that everyone loved
from Second Chances.
Second Chances.
Joe,
yeah, some weird combination of Joe Anglim and Malcolm, where it's like he's got like an intelligence and emotional depth to him that maybe we didn't see from Joe, at least from the edit. But he also has like the golden boy thing where he's winning, you know, immunities, and he's the underdog, and he will win if he gets to the end, and so he's the big target. And like, I mean, I think he's probably one of the better characters to come from the show in a while.
I feel like his confessionals are very fun too. Like, I was surprised with Jay about how fun he is and snarky he can get behind the scenes. It's very fun to watch.
Seeing him at the live Know-It-Alls for the first time with long hair, I now kind of feel like Jay looks a little bit like Brian Corydon.
Oh,
only one I didn't even know he was there. He was at the Live Know-It-Alls that
His hair was so long, he probably didn't
realize. Brian Corydon was there, not Jay. Brian Corydon.
Okay. Sorry, I'm with you.
Are you saying Brian Corydon looks like Jay?
Yes, I think like, they have similar facial features. Yeah,
yeah, Brian Corydon, love you, but he's like a broke-down version of Jay. No way. No.
I love Brian.
Brian seems like a nice guy.
He's a nice guy, but like, I'm not going to compare the two.
Okay. This question is from Drew Ladner. Drew says, everyone has been critical of Will's pendulum strategy, but how does an 18-year-old win the game without a bold strategy like this one? So, Brent, here's your Will question. What do you have to say about that? I am in agreement with Drew. I think that Will had to be bold. He had to try to do something if he was trying to win, and I respect that.
I agree with you. He had to be bold, but there may have been another path forward for him to win, you know, because Rob talks about this all the time, that if you get to the end, ultimately people are going to vote for who they like. And if you get to the end with two people who are relatively dislikable, you may be able to conjure some story, one big move at the end, one big challenge win in order to get the jury to vote for you. Here's my issue with the criticism that Will has gotten, because it's amazing to me that through like the Wiggle Room and then Know-It-Alls and then voicemails, I really haven't heard this talked about at all. They're continually taking Will to task for bringing up the resume point, saying you needed to have a resume. Why would you vocalize that to all these people? You don't want to do that. But Will wasn't doing that before he got bamboozled by Ken. He was going to Ken. He was doing all of the right things, making a quiet move. Then when Ken got butthurt that his name was being bandied about the other side, then Ken goes and blows up Will's game in front of Will. Now Will has to, they're like, well, Will, is this true? Why would you do this? Why would you consider voting me out? What is Ken talking about? So at that point, he's been caught red-handed. He has to tell them the truth, which is, you know, I'm feeling a little put upon by you guys. And I feel like I'm not getting the respect I deserve. You know, I mean, what, are you not with me on this? Or
No. I was doing like, a Will, like, I was trying to play along with you.
Oh, sorry, I'm ranty because I feel like nobody gives Will the credit, which is Will's aware of the fact that you don't want to bring up the fact that you're looking for a resume or something for people to vote for you at the end. But his hand was forced by the idiotic move that Ken made, and then Will, there was no coming that back from that from Will. At that point, he kind of just had to embrace and be like, yeah, I'm making a move here because I want to talk about something at the final tribal council and I don't want to go there as a goat. He didn't go looking to bring it up on its own. I feel like that has been completely lost in the coverage. Totally unfair to Will.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up because I've been feeling this too, because like, I mean, I understand like the edit took him for a ride, right? Like they propped him up as the arrogant, like he made a move too soon and down he goes. And he did, I think, probably make a move too soon. However, I don't think he deserves the criticism he's getting. I'm completely with you on this, Brent. What he did in that moment, like on the spot, he had to come up with like, why did you just betray us? I mean, this is why. And
right?
by all accounts, it worked. The next week, they weren't saying, wow, what a pathetic guy Will is, thinking that he can build a resume. They were saying, man, if Will gets to the end, he wins now. They were all saying that. That's why he became a threat. Like, they portrayed it as like, oh, nobody respects this. But they did respect it. And he even got to Ponderosa and they were all like, man, Will, you really made that move. You really, like, you took me out, says Zeke. Like, they did respect it. And like, I do think that it was well-intentioned, and I think it was too soon. I think that's the problem that ultimately was with it. And if it wasn't too soon, if he had made it like a couple weeks or a couple votes later, maybe, then it's probably portrayed in the edit completely differently. And again, like, maybe if Ken doesn't expose him, it's portrayed completely differently. I definitely think that Will is getting a bad rap for it. And like, you know, it's because he's an easy target, right? Like, he's 18 and he's right. Fighting for respect, and he had to vocalize it in that way. And he didn't vocalize it very effectively, I think, like, especially to the audience, but he did do it well in the game because it did well for him in the game.
Yeah, I know. I feel like, you know, I mean, every season, only one person is going to find the sweet spot, right? There's going to be 19 people here who did something that kept them from getting to where they needed to be. And yeah, I mean, if you want to, you know, harp on Will or criticize Will, fine. But, you know, here's an 18-year-old who, you know, had the self-awareness to recognize that I can't just, you know, allow things to continue to go and expect the result I want. I mean, you know, do we prefer the Natalie Tenorelli model? I sure don't. You know what I mean? Like, I think if you look at, like, the two ways someone could make a mistake to get them out of Survivor, you know, I'd always rather see someone overplay than kind of just be passive and realize, like, oh, I'm second. Hooray.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. If you want to criticize Will, I guess that's what these shows are for, but I would always rather him make the move. Like, if he's deciding, okay, do I want to make the move or not make the move? Make the move. You can always maybe clean it up later. If you don't make the move and then you lose the game, you're always going to be wishing, oh man, I wish I would have made the move. I know Will, like, when he was voted off, he was so happy. And he, you know, goes to Ponderosa, feels like he had a great journey. I feel like that was because he made the move. You know, if he makes the move and then you get voted off, you're like, well, you know what? That's okay. It didn't work out, but I went for it. I feel like that's always easier for you to hang your hat on rather than not do it.
Yeah, and I think
it's the Survivor bucket list. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think that was lost in translation with the edit. Like, people are like, why is he so happy? And it's because he was respected when he went out of the game, and that's why he felt so good. He was like, the move succeeded. It was too early, and I lost because of it. But I did what I tried to, what I set out to accomplish, and that's why he was able to go out with. I mean, I think he would have gone out with his head held high anyway. But he was so satisfied with his experience because he did what he set out to accomplish, and I think that.
You know what?
Yeah,
I feel like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just realized that this is all happening between the three of us. You know what we're doing right now? We're fluffing Will. That's exactly what's going on.
You're doing a better job than Jay did, I guess.
Yeah. Will, if you're listening right now, please don't get any ideas.
All right. Yes, shout out to Will.
He is listening, by the way, and that's not why I wanted to bring it up, because I did, like, every time, like, I listened to all of Rob's podcasts, and it was just never ever brought up by any guest, and I was like, how can you not give him a pass when Ken did what he did? It just his hand was forced. He had to explain himself to these people, and once he explains himself in front of five people, the horse is out of the barn at that point. There's no way he can put the genie back in the bottle.
And again, you only need two words to defend it. Natalie Tenorelli.
Right.
And I know there are going to be people who are like, oh, well, you're ignoring all the bad things he did. I feel like it's been well covered, everything bad that Will did.
Yes.
That's why we're trying to agree. Bring the other side of things right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's quit. Before we shut things down for today, I want to talk about our draft that we did.
Oh, let's not.
Yes. We're going to talk about our draft that we did back in September. We're going to take a look back down memory lane. So we each had our own team, Team Dez, which was me, named after Dez from Survivor Australia or Australian Survivor. And if you haven't
really
seen
it now,
recommend it that you go watch it.
I don't like your outdated references sometimes.
Sometimes I don't like you, Alex Kidwell. A team super duper fan was Alex. Team Walga Monsters was Brent.
Speaking of which, that had not been a thing.
Really?
Really quickly, no one had said super duper fan before the season.
You're Adam, right, because we did it before the season. Pre-game.
Yes, Adam.
Interview. Oh, he said it in his pregame interview?
In his pregame interview. Yeah. Okay. Alex Kidwell's taking credit for all lots of things.
Well, I didn't watch the pregame interview, so... Okay.
Oh,
I thought that's where you got it.
I thought that was where you got it too.
I was saying, like, no, I remember saying on that podcast, like, we keep hearing super fan coming off this Big Brother season. I'm so tired of it. So I'm going to ratchet it up. Super duper fan. That's what I'm going with.
Wow. Great minds.
Great minds, man.
I love it that it's in his Twitter bio now. He's the super duper fan of Survivor's Millennials versus Gen X.
I had to tweet it at him after he said it on the episode the first time and be like, no, this wasn't supposed to be a thing. You're ruining everything.
Oh, man. And then Taryn was Team Brent. So classic. So the first pick was Will. I took Will. Alex took Zeke second. Brent took Brett third.
Hey, they all made the jury.
Hold on. I think is this in order? Because
No, it's not in order. That can't be.
I think it was Taryn took Mari, then Brent took Brett and Chris back to back. Then Taryn took Adam. Okay, this is all out of whack. So I'll just read our teams.
Yeah.
So my team was Will, Paul, Rachel, Jay, and Lucy. Team train wreck.
I think was the order you drafted, though.
Was the order I drafted them in, yes. Alex drafted Zeke, then Jessica, then David, then Michaela, then Hannah. Brent, you drafted Brett, Chris, CeCe, Figgy, Sunday. Taryn, you drafted Mari, Adam, Ken, Taylor, and Michelle. That was looking insanely.
So who do we have left? I can't hear.
Who we have left? So who we have left is I have Jay. Okay.
Okay.
Alex Kidwell has David and Hannah. Okay. Brent, you have Brett. Okay. Taryn, you have Adam and Ken. So Alex and Taryn have the advantage here. Taryn has won two drafts in a row. He won the Survivor Co. Wrong draft. He won the BB18 draft. We didn't do a BBOTT draft, thank goodness. Yeah. now he has got a shot of winning all of the sweeping the drafts we did in 2016.
I feel like he could. I feel like Adam or Ken is definitely possible. They're the winner.
Well, it's funny because I think I remember I was choosing between Adam or David when I was going for my second pick. I was like, do I want Adam or do I want David? And I feel like they're the two.
Similar.
And I might have made the wrong decision.
Yeah, Jordan,
I feel like David has the upper hand.
Jordan, read my five again.
Your five, Alex, were Zeke, Jessica, David, Michaela, and Hannah.
That should have been the winning team.
I was going to say,
that is five casting studs. I don't have a single, ninja of an edit. I don't have a single purple nothing.
I agree.
I'll bet my whole team gets back for All-Stars. You know? So screw
that's why
people.
It's not about characters. It's about it's only the winner. That's why I go for the high risk, high reward.
That's
characters.
Why I did the train wreck, Alex. That's why I did the train wreck. And Alex, I can beat you all. I got you.
Alex, you get the participation trophy, but
all right. Next season I'll just draft all the boring white girls the way Taryn did, and we'll see what's what.
He drafted one and Adam.
I mean in previous seasons.
Okay, not this season.
But I distinctly remember Co-Wrong, where his team was like Alicia, Liz, Michelle. Like, what was your team?
Yeah, that was there was those three.
I think I had Anna Kate, but anyway.
I digress.
That was a fun time when we thought Anna Kate was. Oh, well, I thought Anna Kate was going to win Survivor. That's going to do it, I think, for this edition of the Happy Hour, guys. Thank you so much to those of you who listened live. We're very excited for the Survivor finale on Wednesday. Rob's got a bunch of coverage coming up this week, so check all that out on robiswebsite.com. We'll get some final thoughts from all of the LFC. If you've got a hashtag idea, please throw them in the chat. So everybody, I'll get your final thoughts. And Alex Kidwell, in your final thoughts segment, I would like you to address the Stockwatch debate. So you say you invent, because I went on the voicemails this week with Rob, and you said to make sure to shout you out and said that you invented the Stockwatch. And I said, no, I think I invented this Stockwatch. And to be honest, I genuinely thought in my brain, just like you genuinely thought that you invented the term super duper fan, I genuinely thought that the Stockwatch was something that I created and introduced to the show. So please clear this up, Alex, for the listeners at home so they know why you actually created it.
So I feel bad now because
now that it's been exposed into the light.
But yeah, dude, I totally invented this thing. I mean, if you really want, we can go. And obviously, the four of us have a group DM thread that we do on Twitter. And I'd have to go back to like April and the amount of times we talk. Like, I don't have the patience for it. But I know there's receipts in there, Jordan, because the bottom line is there was a podcast. And it was during Big Brother Canada 4. And it was around the time when like Nikki was HOH. Or like something happened where it was just like, there's nothing going on in this house. And we need a segment to talk. Like, we need something to do with this hour. And we were throwing around stuff in the group DR. And I'm like, what about a stock? Why don't we talk about everyone and say whether or not you'd buy or sell on them? And Jordan's like, oh, that's a really good idea. I'm going to use that. And I'm like, yeah, go ahead and take it. That's great. Go ahead and use the idea.
He did.
And indeed he did. And, you know, I thought it was going to be great. It was going to be our thing. And I was really excited for that. But then once Jordan wants to claim it's his thing, now I've got issues.
Well, I'm sorry, Alex. I formally apologize. Taryn, go ahead.
It's our thing.
I'm skeptical of these missing receipts. What if these are just like Brent's receipts on the last podcast where it's just blank pieces of paper? I'm very skeptical right now.
Taryn, I need you to teach me how to like search like ancient Google or ancient Twitter archives other than just scrolling to the point where I get like severe cramping in my, you know, no, scroll finger.
Thing. If you want to be petty like me and you want to show the proof that you were right, you have to go through all the scroll. That's how pettiness
works. It's not,
but Alex, the best part was like we were texting. It was like it was 3 a.m. your time and like midnight my time. I'm like, what the hell, he's still awake. First you texted me and you're like, what the hell, man, like you took this thing. You said it was you. You're like, I made the stock watch. So I was like, oh, sorry, man. At this point it was our Big Brother Canada Christmas party, so I was like pretty tanked and I had like no idea what was really going on. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, man, like whatever. And you're like, yeah, I'm gonna drag you on Twitter for it. And then you just like,
no, you're like I'll apologize the next time I go live. And I'm like, no, don't worry about it. I already threw you under the bus on Twitter. It was way more fun. Everything's cool.
And it was like, Jordan Parhar is a rat, signed Alex Kidwell. That's basically all it was. And people were like, what? What is this? It was very entertaining.
Drama in the LFC.
Jordan, if people remember you to the point where you do get cast on Big Brother Canada All-Stars, I want some kind of shout out, because I'm single-handedly maintaining your brand.
Alex, if there's a Big Brother Canada All-Stars, I will make your dream come true. Whether or not I probably won't be there, but nor do I really want to. But if one of my friends is there.
Stop.
Do you want to go through all of that psychological warfare, Brent?
I know you would say yes, and you'd be an idiot not to. Come on.
Okay, this is another conversation for another day. But regardless.
Or what if they have an All-Stars and then they're like, Jordan, but we need someone to host the sideshow.
Yeah, I would do that.
Look
at that. I can stay home.
They'd be fools not to.
Yes, yeah. But no. But what I was going to say, Alex, is I will make your dream come true. You have never been shouted out on a reality TV show ever. Brent and Taryn have. So I will make sure one of my friends does a shout out. They'll be like, wait, there's this like Alex guy. Like I'm supposed to shout out. I can't remember his last name. But yeah, shout out to you. That's going to happen.
I'm the middle child of the LFC.
Yes,
that's me.
You are.
I have a hashtag because I want to start a campaign right now. Hashtag Jordan for sideshow host.
Jordan for sideshow host. Okay, well that's not the hashtag, but good try, Taryn.
Like, yeah, I'd love to see Jordan Lloyd on there. That'd be awesome.
Exactly.
That's why I didn't say JP.
Yeah. You know, like I would love to be the sideshow host. They get to like chase around squirrels and stuff. Just like
squirrels.
Yeah, no. I just remember. Or no, she said. Didn't Jordan Lloyd say she wanted to be a squirrel if she'd be any animal? That's where I got that from. Anyway,
sounds right.
Brent, final thoughts today, my friend.
Oh, final thoughts. What an amazing season. I'm just so pumped about anything that could happen here in the finale. You know, even if Ken wins, I mean, it's look, I'm not going to I'm still waiting to see what Survivor has in store. Like, I feel like they're going to justify the win some way. I don't know whether or not I'll buy it, but I'm sure they're going to find a way to explain it. It's been a really fun ride. So all of the players, they just came to play this season. And, you know, how can you not stand up and applaud that?
Apparently.
Lots of applause. Taryn, final thoughts, my friend.
I just thank God for this season. You know, sitting through Big Brother OTT, you know, all fall long. This has been a wondrous thing to have, and I'm so like I'm more excited for this finale than I have been in a long time for any finale. I'm really pumped, and I'm really pulling for Adam. Like it's like there's gonna be like tears flowing from my eyes the entire episode. I know it.
Wow, can cry.
I feel so attached to his story, and like I can't even relate to it in any way. I'm just like I'm really pulling for him, and that doesn't ever happen with me.
Can I ask you a favor? When they get ready to read the votes, if Adam is in the final tribal council, just make sure to like Periscope or video yourself. Like I want to see the moment. Human.
I could just see Taryn with like an oil can of tears. Like
there's far too much vulnerability.
Oh, secreting man. Ocular fluids. This is sad.
Hashtags. I'm looking here. Edmo is really pushing for a three-sided coin. So I guess we can go with that. I don't know if you guys have any ideas. There's nothing that really.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. That pretty sums up our podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Three-sided coin. Bonus include JP for Sideshow, if you like that.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
I also want to give a shout out to his stock watch has ended. I feel like that was a pretty good.
His stock watch has ended. That was good. His stock watch has ended. Yeah, that was pretty good.
I'm the Jon Snow of the stock watch because I got stabbed to death by my brothers.
Oh, what? Spoil Game of Thrones all the time.
Yeah, you do. Wow, Alex. Jeez.
That brings up someone. John Densford on Twitter. Girl, please. He's like, don't spoil Big Brother Canada 3. I'm not through the Jordan boot yet. I'm like, oh, please stop. Like, come on. That was like, how long ago? I think we're allowed to talk about it.
I'm good at not spoiling topical stuff. But if you're like, dude, don't spoil this thing from 2015. I'm like, ooh.
Right.
Gamer time at the beginning.
Don't forget to follow these guys on Twitter if you don't already. Alex is at Alex Kidwell, Brent is at One Lucky Gay, and Taryn is at Armstrong Taryn. Don't forget to subscribe to the Rahappy Hour as well. You can go to robiswebsite.com/Rahappy Hour for that. You never miss an episode on iTunes or wherever your podcasts are found. We've got some off-season podcasts coming up because there is no Big Brother. There is going to be no Survivor after Wednesday for quite some time. So Mike Bloom and I are working on a movie podcast we're going to be doing. Haley Strong and I are going to be talking about 90 Day Fiance, even though the finale was like a month ago, but we had to wait for Haley to finish the season. So that should be a lot of fun. So stay tuned for that. And if you've got any podcast ideas, feel free to send them my way. You can email the show. rahappyhour@robhezawebsite.com. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening and for being around all of the OTT season and the Survivor season. My name is Jordan Parhar for Alex Kidwell, Brent Walgamont, and Taryn Armstrong. You all have a great day. Hashtag three-sided coin. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Peace out. The theme song of the reality TV Rahappy Hour is written and performed by Ryan Elder. Check out more of his work at ryanelder.music.com.